people try to avoid problems and avoid challenges. You know, they think they shouldn't have any, but it's the opposite is true. You should, right? The only people without challenges are dead, right? You know, you just want to have better and bigger and more high-class problems, you know, to build your muscles and grow even more.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome everyone to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today I have Brian Moskowitz joining me. He's a managing director of the Kenzak Group, which is a legal recruitment firm that helps build dominant law firms and thriving legal careers. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Let's start off with a little bit of background. Tell us where this journey in recruitment started for you, how you got into it and how you got into working with attorneys.
Okay. So it started off my first time recruiting about 15 years ago. I practiced law in New York, moved down after 9/11. So I guess that's almost 20 years ago now. I lost track of time. Went into legal recruiting then. The reason I chose the legal aspect, you know, based on my experience with lawyers, I knew how they operated. I knew what made them tick. I knew what worked, what didn't work. So it was just an easy transition. Then at some point I got recruited to go back to the practice of law. So I started practicing again after that. And then I chose to leave the practice of law for a second time and went into attorney coaching. My sole focus was helping attorneys, you know, based upon mindset, mental toughness, you know, thrive in all areas of their life. Then I got recruited again, went back into law and went to big law this time. And then I finally left the practice of law during COVID and I went back into and reopened my recruiting company, Kenzak Group.
All right. So you've been recruited a number of times. So know what recruiting is like on
That's
the other side.
This is the second go around. So I've been recruited. And now I do the recruiting.
There you go. So I know on you know, on your LinkedIn profile, the coaching business was called Attorney Revolution. I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that. I know you're not actively doing that anymore, but tell me about that mindset piece and what you're doing with Attorney Revolution.
Sure. So a key part of my background is the work I do with Tony Robbins. I'm one of his trainers. And throughout my time with him, you know, I've learned his tools, his technologies, and it's all based upon controlling what you can control, right? It's all mindset. It's all mental toughness. And having worked with thousands of participants, you know, I saw a need for it, but more particularly having practicing law at that time and seeing all my friends and other attorneys just struggling with, you know, well-being, mindset, you know, just internal challenges in the practice of law, which is not easy. I saw a great synergy there. You know, take the everything I've learned in the Tony Robbins world and I've been using with the general population and just focus it straight to attorneys. And the revolution part was, you know, to just revolutionize the way they live their lives. You know, the time you spend at work, although it's a large amount of quantifiable time, right? Lots of hours, you have a whole nother life, right? And you need to sort of thrive in all areas of your life in order to be a whole person, be fulfilled. So it was just a natural path for me to follow. And I did that for a few years and it was going really, really well. And that's when I got recruited, you know, to go back in and to bring that into a law firm, right? So to take that and help to build and lead a practice area within a firm using those skills. And, you know, so while I don't have Attorney Revolution anymore, what I found was when I went back into recruiting, the coaching aspect just came naturally, right? And so attorneys have been hiring me to coach them. So I guess when I was doing Attorney Revolution, I was out promoting it and marketing it and seeking attorneys for clients. What I found is now that I'm recruiting, it just happens organically and they reach out to me, especially through, I guess, my LinkedIn content. So that's been an interesting sidebar, you know, with the recruiting, how I get to help attorneys both find the right opportunity, but just help work with them on their mindset and they, you know, their whole life become fulfilled.
Now, if someone's listening to this podcast and they're thinking, well, things are okay for me, I want more. How do you start with that coaching? I mean, what are some of the tactics and the tools that attorneys can take, you know, just low level stuff, they're just listening to this and not hiring you, to improve their mental toughness and performance? Because, you know, mindset is such an important part of business. You know, where do they start with that?
So there's two parts to that. So if they want more, right, the first thing you need to do is figure out what that more looks like, you know, to get clear on what is it that you want, right? So there's going to be a gap. There's where you are and where you want to be, right? So you have to get clear on what that is, figure out why you want that, because there's going to be bumps along the way, and that why, that purpose will drive you through all the challenges, you know, and then you figure out what you need to do to close the gap. So it's, you know, what do you want? Why do you want it? And then create that massive action plan to help close the gap. Now, the other piece, which will allow you to do that, and what's more important, is the mindset piece. And a big part of that is understanding what you can control, what you can't control, taking control of your emotions. And if I could give just, you know, one specific tool, it'd be to control your emotional state, right? And there's sort of a three parts to that. You know, what you do with your body, right? If you're going to be sitting slumped over, you know, looking down, taking shallow breaths, you will respond to challenging your life in one way. Whereas if you think of yourself, you know, if you see a sprinter on the starting line ready to go, or a Tom Brady ready, you know, to get the ball from a snap, shoulders back, deep breaths, ready to face everything. So get your body in the right shape and what you focus on. You know, I did a lot of work when I practiced divorce law, right? So people focused on, this is the end of my marriage, which means this is the end of my life as I know it. You know, nothing's going to happen from here. Whereas others said, you know what, this is the beginning, right? I now have an opportunity to move forward and, you know, open a space and create new and beautiful, better things in my life. So it's just what you're focusing on. Is this the end? Is this the beginning? Is this good? Is this bad? Because nothing has any meaning unless the meaning you give it, right? So you can come into this, listen to this podcast, and this podcast is what it is until someone labels it, you know, Brian was a great guest, Brian was a terrible guest, right? So the meaning you give it. So I guess that's, you know, what you're focusing on. And then the words you use to label it, right? To say beginning, end, you know, great, not great. So those are the three things, which do with your body, what you're focusing on, and the words you use. If you could put those three together, you are well on your way to taking back control of your mindset and being able to face adversity, challenges, and be resilient. You know, another piece I would add, you know, people try to avoid problems and avoid challenges. You know, they think they shouldn't have any, but it's the opposite is true. You should, right? The only people without challenges are dead, right? You know, you just want to have better and bigger and more high class problems, you know, to build your muscles and grow even more.
Yeah, I've noticed for myself that if I'm not having challenges in my life, you know, stuff that's, you know, like business related, that's, it just basically means I'm not stretching, right? I'm just in a comfortable zone. And so if I'm wanting something different or wanting more, then those challenges just come with that territory, right? I mean, there's no growth without those challenges. I heard someone say recently that when you're setting goals, you know, a lot of people set goals like, all right, what do I have to do to get there? And then he said, it might be worth reframing it and saying, what do I have to sacrifice to achieve those goals? Like, what is the sacrifice I'm making to get to those goals? Because you are sacrificing something. You're sacrificing time or money or whatever the case may be, and then introducing those challenges into your life. So I love that. I mean, the conflict is what creates growth.
And there's always going to be a sacrifice, right? There's only so many hours in a day. What's beautiful though, is you get to choose what you're going to spend your time on, You can choose to spend your time mindlessly surfing social media, or you can choose to spend your time listening to a podcast or, you know, reading a book, right? It's where you choose to spend your time. And one more thing just popped into my mind. I should have wrote notes down ahead of time. Consistency, right? Setting up processes in your life. That's another key to having a strong mindset, right? So you have set routines every single day as to what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. So your mind is focused at that time and you're not sort of making it up on the fly, right? So having set routines in the morning to fill your mind with what you want to focus on, as opposed to what the outside world wants you to focus on. So I say that's another key, is to have set routines to get you in the right frame of mind to move out into the world the way you want to move out, as opposed to having others dictate to you what you should be focusing on and what you should be doing.
What would be a strong morning routine that you either you practice yourself or encourage people to practice to get that mindset straight?
Right. So what I'll say first is everybody does have a morning routine, right? The challenge is for most people, it's subconscious. They don't know they're doing it, right? They'll, you know, alarm will go off. They'll snooze 3-4 times, you know, go into the bathroom, brush their teeth, check their phones, start, you know, on Facebook, whatever other social media they're doing. So they'll have a routine. The only question is whether you consciously have a routine or unconsciously. So I would think the best routine is one that you are going to do consistently to put yourself in the right frame of mind. And I could just share mine, which is very similar to other people that I know. So first thing I do in the morning is I do breathing exercises, right? It's called box breathing. It's sort of a form of meditation, okay? Just to clear my head and prepare myself for the day. Then I start moving my body, right? I start getting some flow, right? Just get the blood flowing. I do some stretching, and this way, you know, I loosen up the joints and I'm ready for the day. I drink a glass of lemon water, right? And then I fill my mind with something good, whether I'm reading, you know, 10, 15 pages in a book, listening to a podcast, listening to a self-development book. So I'm feeding my mind with good content, good information. And now, you know, I prepared myself, you know, to move out into the day. So again, part of it is meditation, clearing my head, moving, getting some physical exercise, and then filling my head with, you know, good content, good information, which is going to make me a better person overall, so I can now move out into the world.
Yeah, I'm definitely a routine person in the morning as well. I find that if I don't execute on my routine, I wake up a little bit late or something else, I feel very off, like my day started abruptly. And I have two kids, and so they're, you know, they're like terrorizing me. And it's and you are at the mercy of your day if you don't control the way that it starts, right? Because there's so many things that are trying to compete for your attention. So if you don't take charge of those, then they're just taking ownership of you and you don't really have any control.
Absolutely. And, you know, another piece to add to that is, so I have a routine at the end of the day as well, right? So I don't leave the office until I have cleared out the emails. I have cleared out, you know, my notes, and I am have my day set for the next morning, right? So when I come in and I get to work, I'm ready to go, right? So there's not that waste of time and now responding to emails. So I am ready to go in the morning. And back to the morning routine for a second, it's going to change over time, right? So, you know, while you have a routine, the routine will change. You know, there was one of the challenges I've had over the years is getting enough sleep at night, right? You know, I've done 5 hours, 6 hours. And in the past few years, it's been this big push about you need 8 hours sleep, you need 8 hours sleep. So I'm like, okay, great. And I will now get 8 hours sleep. And I programmed myself, conditioned myself to sleep 8 hours per day. And it just didn't work well for me, right? So what I found is, you know, seven and a half works well for me. Eight was too much. I was groggy, right? So it just didn't have the energy that I needed. So while your routines will change, you need to see what works best for you. Just because I tell you something or you read something online doesn't make it right. doesn't make it the right routine for you. So just test things and, you know, figure out the routine that works best for you.
Yeah, I have always envied the people that apparently only have to sleep 5 hours. I wish I could sleep 5 hours or 6 hours, but I am a easily 7.5 hour sleeper. And it makes it hard to knock out an early morning routine, because even if you go to bed at 10 and get up at 5:30, you know, that's 10's kind of early. You know, I mean, it depends on who it is, right? But it doesn't depends on your family life. But it can, like, kids go down at 8 or 8:30, and 10 creeps up really fast. So
I hear you.
But the sleep makes a massive impact. And so that's great to hear that you added on to it a bit and found your sweet spot, because it makes a huge difference.
And you also have to see who's giving you the information, right? So if you have a lifestyle with young children, right, it might not work, you know, with staying, going to bed at a certain time and getting up at a certain time. You have to be able to shift your life to accommodate it. Right? Just because someone says, do this, do that, has to fit into your life.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears a little bit over to the recruiting side. And I want to start with asking, what are some of the most common reasons you see attorneys wanting to leave a firm that they're at?
Their boss. You know, the person they directly report to. You know, there's a meme floating around somewhere that says, people don't leave their job, they leave a toxic work culture or a toxic boss. And I absolutely agree. If there is a good culture and there is a good relationship with your boss, so the attorney that you report to, you can always sit down, have a conversation and see where things are going. But if it is a toxic environment, if the boss has no clue how to lead people, that is the quickest way to get somebody out the door, right? I mean, money is important. But what I will say, you know, toxic work culture is the quickest way to force an attorney to leave your firm.
Can you give me a couple examples of what that might look like? A work culture in general could be, you know, the boss is one. Right. What else might there be?
So to touch on the boss for a second, false deadlines, right? So that was a big one that I've seen, and I actually lived through it. You know, we need this by Friday at 5 o'clock, Friday at, you know, 3 o'clock, so I can review it and get it out. And so you meet that deadline, and next thing you know, it's now Monday at 9 o'clock, and then it's Tuesday, you know, at 5 o'clock. So false deadlines, starting and stopping, that's a big no-no.
But like, you delivered it and then they just didn't review it at that time? Or what do you mean by false deadline?
Right. So they don't review it, or they make you work the entire weekend to deliver the product and say, you know what, not really, I don't really need it today. Go back, review it again before they even touch it, and now give it to me Wednesday, right? So it's a start, stop, the lack of respect for your time and effort, okay? I guess another piece would be yelling, screaming. Right. I've heard I never experienced that, but I've definitely heard that from other attorneys, whether it's right or wrong. Right. Whether the behavior of the attorney was right or wrong, the yelling and screaming is inappropriate under any circumstances whatsoever. An environment of just fear. Right. Where you are dreading speaking to your boss, where you are dreading, you know, what's going to happen when you submit a document to them for review, what's going to happen when they review it and get back to you. So just the fear and intimidation factor. I get, those are just, you know, three examples I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. Now on the other side of that, what makes a firm attractive to go to? I mean, probably the opposite of most of those things, but you know, is there anything else where you just hear, oh yeah, I like this firm because of this, or some firms just tend to be getting the best candidates. Do you have any advice for people that are actually doing the recruiting?
So when people are going to leave that toxic firm or any firm, what are they going to look for? Obviously money, especially right now where there is lots of money being thrown at attorneys, but that's just a price for admission, right? You have to be within the ballpark, and then, okay, now what am I going to look to? What is the type of work you'll be giving me? Will I have client contact? What is the work culture, right? Will I work as part of a team? Will I work alone? What is my boss like? Who's the person I'll be reporting to? You know, what's their rapport, how do the other attorneys feel, you know, working with this person? Will the position be virtual, right? Will I get to work from home? Will I have to go to an office every single day? You know, the type of work I'll be doing, am I going to be doing research and writing for the next 3 years? Or will I have actual, you know, court appearance, right? Or have the chance to go into court and interact? What's the partnership path? Okay. You know, what do I have to do over, you know, 1, 3, 5 years in order to become a partner, right? So once you're leaving a firm, those are the things you're going to want to look for. But again, that's general, right? What's important to you specifically? Some attorneys, it's going to be money and nothing else. Others will be, you know what? I have young children. I want to work from home. You know, I'll take less everything else, but I want to work from home. Others will say, you know what? I have young children. I have to go to the office, right? I don't want to work from home, or I can't work from home because I have young children. So it's really drilling down and finding out what makes that attorney tick, what's important to that attorney. Do they want to be a partner, you know, to feel significant, right? Or do they want to be a become a partner to be secure in their job and in their career? So it's finding out what makes the attorney tick and then finding the opportunity that matches up what they are looking for. Now, matchmaker.
Yeah, matchmaker. Now, for my industry, digital marketing, early this year, you know, close to a year now, we saw just a really sharp increase in salary ranges. I would say probably 20% or more, just kind of for us sort of came out of the blue, but maybe it probably didn't come out of the blue. And have you seen a similar trend with attorneys' compensation? And I mean, what percentage have you seen over what period of time increasing? It seems like compensation is going up across the board.
It is through the roof. I think the entry-level salaries, entry-level, just graduating law school, at the top firms is now about $215,000.
Wow.
Okay, that's entry-level to start. Sign-on bonuses. Okay, firms are giving six-figure sign-on bonuses. Right.
For new attorneys?
For lateral attorneys. So if I'm working for firm A and I get recruited to join firm B, to incentivize the attorney to make the move, they'll give a six-figure sign-on bonus in addition to paying the going rate for the salary. So salaries have gone through the roof, and attorneys are, you know, moving for the salary, right? I mean, come out of law school, you have debt to pay, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt sometimes. So it's hard to turn down, you know, a sign-on bonus. It's hard to turn down those big salaries. And the trickle-down effect. Now, medium-sized firms, you know, large firms are poaching from medium-sized firms, and medium-sized firms cannot anywhere, you know, keep up with the what salaries that the big firms are paying. So they need to make up for it in quality of life, right? Work from home, you know, paid time off, vacations, other perks and benefits they can give you, you know, a client contact, you know, a quicker partnership path. You need to find something other than money in that instance.
Yeah. I was literally just going to ask what the trickle down effect was. And, yeah. You know, does that trickle down effect, you know, will it ultimately go down to the law firm's clients as well with higher billable hours, or, you know, maybe not so much? I mean, it's just, it seems like every aspect of costs are going up, especially in services industries.
So at the big firms, as the salaries go up, the hourly rates are going up, right? But at that level, you know, the clients can absorb, they may not be happy, but they can absorb those price increases. But medium-sized firms, their clients, small-sized firms, their clients, oftentimes will not be able to absorb those price increases. And it definitely trickles down. Large firms take from the medium firms take from the small firms. That's just, you know, the way it works.
Yeah. Now, do you use any sort of like personality assessments or profiling or any assessments at all when trying to match firms and candidates? Is that a thing?
So sometimes firms will want us to perform those. Other times firms do them on your own. So at the initial part where I get involved, I am not using any assessments, but I most definitely encourage firms to do so under certain circumstances. Right. Depending on the type of position, depending upon the years of experience they're looking for, depending upon the attorney's background, I don't think you can go wrong by using one, unless that's the only tool you're looking at, right? So let's say you get the assessment back and your decision is based solely on the assessment. No, because an assessment is only as good as the candidate can verify, right? So if you have an assessment and then you speak with the attorney and you see it matches up, then I would give the assessment weight. But in other instances, the assessment, you know, is different and does not give the same information as you would get from background, you know, doing reference checks and speaking and interviewing the attorney. So you have to make sure that it does add up. So it can be dangerous if used in the wrong way.
Yeah. Now, are there any practice areas that seem to have higher demand for attorneys right now?
Corporate, mergers and acquisitions attorneys, real estate attorneys. I can't get enough of them. Nobody can get enough of them. They just don't exist, right? You know, law schools can't produce a fourth year to seventh year associate quick enough. They're just not out there, which is why law firms, you know, large firms poach from each other. But when there's no more to poach from, they go down to medium size. Medium size goes down to small size. You just can't produce them quick enough.
And is that simply a function of the state of the economy being so strong right now that those, you know, mergers and acquisitions are taking place more regularly? You know, real estate's doing great. Is that why there's so much demand?
Whether it's the strength of the economy, it is the demand from the corporations doing deals, whether it's, you know, the SPACs or the mergers. There is a lot of money floating around out there. And, you know, businesses and private equity companies are all doing deals and they need attorneys to do those deals. I know lots of large law firms, medium-sized law firms, they can't take on any more business because just aren't enough attorneys to do the work.
Yeah, that's, I've been hearing, you know, professional services, that is not uncommon. I've been hearing that in just so many different industries that people can't take on more work. And how has COVID over the last 2 years affected, you know, your industry, or just, you know, you mentioned a little bit about quality of life and staying at home with families, but have you seen any other like measurable impacts with COVID, or, I mean, has it negatively affected certain industries or anything like that?
So I can speak to the legal industry. And while there was an initial negative impact on it, and, you know, lots of law firms laid off attorneys, laid off staff, you know, took the PPE money, PPP money. after that initial jolt, law firms have been one of the more successful industries. Why? Because we can work from home, right? You can work virtually. We don't need to be out there doing a job, or they don't have to be out there doing a job where they're interacting with other people face to face. And when we do need to interact, we do it by Zoom, right? Whether it's talking to your colleagues or going to court, you know, court hearings move to Zoom, you know, doing everything virtually. So attorneys and law firms were able to thrive during COVID, and I think profit is through the roof, probably at record levels for law firms during the past, you know, 18 months.
Yeah, it's so incredible how COVID has made everything so digital and just, you know, it's, we've been talking about COVID for a while, so it's nothing new to a lot of people, but my mind is still boggled when I see just the massive shifts in the way that, you know, businesses interact, and, you know, all the restaurant stuff with like all the to-go ordering. It's just like, you know, all the drive up, you know, that stuff wasn't as prevalent before. And now it's just the norm. It just is what it is. It's wild how much our world has changed in 18 months.
And it comes down to mindset, right? You adapt or you die, right? So while the overwhelming majority of law firms and attorneys succeeded and were successful during this time, there are others that went under. There are others that suffered, right? Restaurants as well. Lots of restaurants went under, others pivoted, okay? So it comes down to the mindset, the mental toughness, you know, the ability to bounce back and take control. We couldn't control COVID. We couldn't control government mandates, right? We couldn't control the quarantines. All we control was how we responded to it. And some responded better than others.
Yeah. Well, Brian, I just have one more question for you before we wrap up. And I'm interested to hear if you have any predictions about sort of the future of the legal talent pool? I mean, you mentioned that corporations are very short on lawyers. I mean, you know, in the next 5 years, do you see any trends coming, or, you know, what is kind of the future of your industry look like?
So in the shorter term, 6 months to a year, I see no slowdown in demand for recruiting and attorneys in the legal industry. And at some point, though, it will slow down. And then what happens to all these law firms that staffed up, right? I see layoffs coming in the future. Now, isn't that 18 months, 3 years, 5 years? I don't know, but it will happen. Everything's cyclical, right? So they're going to ride this boom while they can. And at some point, there will be a bust of some sorts, right? And I do believe there'll be layoffs at that point in the foreseeable future, 3-5 years, whatever that is. Other predictions, I think, you know, work from home will be here to stay. And the firms that are flexible, I think, will succeed more than the ones that are strict. So what I mean by that is work from home only, work from the office only. I don't think either one of those plans will work, right? You need to have flexibility for both. I think that's going to be critical. I also think there's a big push for non-legal entities to get involved in providing legal services. I believe Arizona at this point, I know there's one other state that allows non-attorney ownership of law firms, right? I don't see that slowing down at all. Another thing I see happening is, you know, the big four, I think it's four at this point, you know, Ernst & Young, whoever the other accounting firms are, I can't think of them, right? My daughter works for Ernst & Young, so that one jumps out of my mind. I see them trying to, you know, wiggle their way, you know, work their way into providing actual legal services in certain instances. So I see lots of changes coming. Some will require more attorneys, some will require less. But the only thing we can guarantee, there will be change.
Change is coming. Winter is coming at some point.
That's it. It is. And then after that, what's going to come? Spring and summer. And after that, fall and winter. And the cycle keeps repeating itself.
Yep. Well, hey, Brian, thank you so much. For anyone that wants to learn more about you and your firm, where can they check you out or get in contact with you?
So the easiest way will be to find me on LinkedIn, Brian Moskowitz, the Kenzac Group. Send me a direct message, or you can just email me direct. It's my first name dot last name. So brian.moskowitz@kenzacgroup. That is kenzakgroup.com.
Perfect. Thank you again. And to everybody listening, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you, Adam.